Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
One thing that I've learned about our community here is that there really are some incredibly kind souls. People, hundreds and hundreds of strangers have reached out to us and, you know, offered their sympathy and, you know, loving prayers. And I mean, daily people message me and they're praying for us, praying for Allison. And we have friends that do fundraisers, you know, out of the kindness of their heart. And the relationships that have been developed from this are incredible. It's just really sad that it takes like a tragedy to have relationships be forming. And I wish more than anything it was under different circumstances.
20-year-old Allison Watterson disappeared just before Christmas in December of 2019. Allison was a bright, beautiful young woman with her entire life ahead of her. She was last seen by her boyfriend, and his stories about that day were shaky at best. While we were working on covering Allison's story, on June 20th, 2020, the remains of Allison Watterson were found. Though she's no longer a missing person, telling her story is still important. This week's episode tells the story of Allison Watterson, her love of life, and the tragic loss her family has endured. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 237 of The Vanished, part one of Allison Watterson's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Allison Watterson disappeared on Sunday, December 22nd, 2019, after a weekend full of bizarre occurrences. She was with her boyfriend, Ben, on that fateful day, when he claims the two became separated in the woods. But Ben has many stories about what happened that day, and none of them seem to add up or explain why a healthy young woman ended up dead in an area of the woods so close to the road and homes. Working on stories of the missing, you just never know when a case is going to have a major break or a person is going to be found. We were preparing an episode on this case when 20-year-old Allison Watterson's lifeless body was found near North Plains, Oregon on June 20th, just 6 months after her mysterious disappearance. Her remains were found by a property owner clearing out some land when she stumbled upon a shoe and then what appeared to be a human skull and rib bones. The owner of the property called local law enforcement who responded to the scene. When Allison was found, we didn't want to just drop her story because we thought Allison's story was still an important one to tell. We spoke extensively with Allison's aunt, Billy, and she shared with us what the recovery was like.
A lady was cleaning out an old pasture that had overgrown for years and years and years. And so she was on her tractor and she was just moving, you know, debris, cutting bushes. And she saw a shoe and then went a little further and then and saw her. It's changed her life. It has changed her life. You know, she obviously knew from day one about Allison. And then here she is on her property. And she now, we're all going to work together to turn the area into a park that she's going to dedicate to Allison. The scent dog did pick up her scent in that area. I don't know how it wasn't that the dog kept going to find her because she was very close. But what I'm told is that decomposition had started. So where she was laying, decomposition started there. The medical examiner, with or without the decomposition being under her, they would be able to know if she was moved or not. And that's not what we're getting. I mean, just her location alone. She is in stone's throw from where he last saw her. That's, you know, that I think is something that was, that stood out, obviously. But yeah, she was wearing that mustard yellow sweatshirt. And so that's what they found.
Billy's son's wedding was scheduled for June 20th, 2020, the day Allison's body was discovered. Though the wedding went on as planned, Billy shared that local media quickly picked up on the story, and it was a rush to notify everyone before they heard about it on the news or social media.
So my son got married that Saturday. The private detective, he had called me like 2 weeks prior, and he's like, hey, I just like wanted to make a plan, and the event something were to happen, we would like to call you and then have you tell me to you. Just, I think it would be more sensitive. And so we got home from the wedding, we're just relaxing, and my phone rings and it's Michael. And I just looked at my daughter and I'm like, why? Like, why is he calling me right now? The earth just completely opened up. So I had to, you know, hurry to my sister and the detective. And it was so horrible. Bradley and Abby had already had the ceremony. So we had the ceremony. It was really lovely. And then we left them to kind of, you know, be with our friends and family because we were going to go and rest. And we were not going to tell him. Him and Abby had a hotel for the night. I just wasn't going to tell him until the morning. But then the media, before telling the family. And the thing is, so what really frustrating is what I found in all this is that you are just a story. You're not entitled to privacy or like you would think the news would call you and say, hey, we're about to air. What are you okay? Like, is that okay? Like, have you told all your friends and family that you feel necessary? Within hours, they had already put a press release. I understand it's necessary, but there's so many people that we had just not been able to talk to yet that had to find out that way. And it was just heartbreaking. It was totally heartbreaking. My mom, my own mom. So I finally called him. It was later. It was close to 11. And I have to tell you something. And they grew up together, you know, so it wasn't easy. It was terrible. And her brother has had a very, very difficult time. And I just think it's going to be that way forever. And Allison, you know, she loves love. Like, it sounds so cheesy, but she loves anniversaries and weddings. I mean, she just did something she's very, very, like, feels very in touch with is that love. And so to have these dates coincide now is just terrible.
Though Allison's body has been found, the number of questions only increased, and the lack of answers continued in the ensuing weeks, as the medical examiner was unable to release a definitive cause or manner of death. Billy told us more.
There was almost zero tissue left, so it was primarily just bone. There's so little that can be found from bone unless there was, you know, a gunshot wound or broken bone in the neck or, you know, something of that nature. And there wasn't so far. We've had nothing. There's nothing came up in that. We believe that it will just remain undetermined.
Throughout her life, Allison Watterson was one of those people who seemed to be bursting with positive energy. She enjoyed all of life's little moments and cherished those around her. As you can imagine, over the period of months that we were researching Allison's case, we conducted many interviews both before and after Allison was found. We touched base with her friend Raven, who told us what a special kind of friend Allison was.
So I met Allison, I believe, around 7th to 8th grade. I graduated high school in 2016. I can't exactly remember how we met. I know we met in school, and I remember inviting her to my Skate World party and her not being able to go because she didn't have a ride, and then being like stuck to her hip ever since. And we've kind of like fluctuated between friend groups throughout time, but we've always stuck close to each other. My birthday is the day before hers. I have the matching eye tattoo with her. We got it together spontaneously on Friday the 13th a couple years ago. She talks about nothing but love and light. She doesn't see bad in people unless she is shoved in the face with it. She only sees the good at first. She's talked people out of suicide before. She's had people who are homeless. She's bought food for homeless people. She's stood with homeless people to try to get them money as well, bring that money in with what she can, because she doesn't have her money at, you know, she doesn't have money of her own, but helping with what she can. Always the light and love at the end of the tunnel. Always the connector of all her friends. I've met so many friends through her that are now, I can't even remember. I have to think about the fact that I met them through Allison, because them and I are so close separately now. But she is just a merger of so many people, and she empathizes with so many and everybody. She loves makeup like me. Me and her always like talked about makeup together. We would give each other beauty tricks. Our sleepovers would always, you know, we would have face masks on, do makeup in the morning together. Sometimes when we would hang out, we would want to match each other's eye looks.
We also spoke to Allison's mom, Misty, and she shared with us what a joy Allison was in her life.
Well, Allison, she's my second child. She has an older brother named Blake. She was born June 5th, 1999, and she was a month early, so she was about 6 pounds, a little tiny thing. She was a great baby, great toddler, very active. She's kind of hyper, but in a cute way. She's very bonded with myself and her dad and her brother. When she was in school, she loved going to school for just the social part of it. She really was not into the academic part of it really at all. She had pretty severe ADHD. She just didn't like the academic part. She couldn't keep her mind focused on that. But she loved talking to her friends and socializing. And I remember we would try and plan sleepovers. She couldn't make it through the night. I'd always get that phone call. Mom, I miss you. Can you please come get me? And of course I would every time. And finally, when she was about 13, she finally made it through the night with one of her best friends. And then those sleepovers were just on after that. She loved sleepovers. Even when she was home, I remember her saying sleepover a month before she went missing. You know, I'm going to have a sleepover with my friend. So she really, really enjoyed her friendships, and she loved going out and doing things, camping, the beach, you know, anything outdoorsy she was totally like down for. She has always wanted us to go on adventures. And unfortunately, I worked 2 jobs as they were growing up, and I didn't have a ton of time to be able to take her and do the fun things that she wanted. But my sister, Billy, she's been very lucky. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she was able to take Allison on out with her and the kids to do a lot of things. So I was really, you know, thankful for that aspect of her childhood. She's a great kid. She's loving and compassionate, kind. She's very trusting of people. She is an advocate for the less fortunate and for animals. Anytime anybody would say anything, social media wise, if she ever heard anybody saying anything wrong or she didn't agree with that was not advocating for, you know, mental illness or animals or children or the elderly, she was the first one to speak up, you know, and try and change that person's mind about the way they think about whatever they were talking about. So she's funny. She's so silly, and I miss her little laugh. I miss her little laugh so much. Very contagious. Kind of a little hippie girl. She would be happy just traveling around and, you know, hanging out with her friends. And kind of what she wanted to do was, you know, spend the first couple of years of her 20s, you know, traveling with her friends, just kind of being a new age hippie. So she's just an incredible girl, and her and I are best friends, soulmates. And, you know, she's missed so very much, so deeply.
Allison's dad, Alan, also spoke with us, and he told us what he remembers about his daughter's early childhood and life.
Right away, she had a special kind of like loving little cute bubbliness. And I realize that I'm biased, but everybody said the same thing. She just says really cute things, just very, very innocent, overly innocent and sweet things. From the age of 3 until she was about 14, she's an animal lover. She wanted to be a vet. She would pick up, when it would rain, she would pick up worms off of the sidewalk and put them back in the dirt. That's how cute and loving she is. She's very, very hyper. Early on, she was diagnosed in school with a learning disability. So a lot of things were hard for her to understand sometimes or to get right away. So in that sense, she could be pretty naive or like overly trusting or not notice certain things. Like if someone wasn't being nice to her, she sometimes would just not notice things like that. She has a lot of friends. She has always been really into like sleepovers, and she just makes friends so easily. That's what, she's an incredibly social person. She had so many friends, and she just like loves them all. And she's kind of like, she's definitely a daddy's girl. We're very close. Growing up, she had a little trouble kind of working her way into society. She did have the learning disability, so she was like hanging out with friends a lot and trying to find herself and working some jobs like here and there. And she actually had a job interview on the Monday that she was reported missing. She was in great spirits the whole week leading up to this whole fiasco and really positive.
Allison suffered from a form of scoliosis that involved not only her spine, but also her shoulders. When we spoke with her father, Alan, he told us about this condition that affected her.
She just had, she'd have a little bit of pain. I used to rub this, there's one spot, and we call it the nugget, right next to her shoulder blade. She had curvature of the spine, and it would hurt her. She hadn't been talking about it too much for the last couple of years. I was trying to get her to lift weight, so I was trying to get her to do that, but she's not really like that. You know, going crazy, going jogging, going exercising, anything like that.
Allison also struggled with anxiety, and her dad told us more about that, too.
She did have pretty bad anxiety. She said that her chest would get tight and her heart would race. So I have anxiety, too, and it's better now, but I know that feeling, and it's not a good feeling. She figured she could just go to a doctor and get a prescription, but I said, well, you know, you have to sign up for a doctor. I was trying to get her and start the counseling. See, that's the hard part, is for her to start with the counseling and different emotions and letting out, you know, things that are bothering her, anxiety. Problem was also a blocker to the solution a little bit. But I was trying to get her to go talk to a behavioral therapist. I have a behavioral therapist, and it's just good to just talk about things sometimes. And then, yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, some people are a little bit, you know, shy, and she's certainly not like socially shy, but in situations like that, like talking to a counselor or like a job interview, those things would just really freak her out because she was so worried about saying the right thing, understanding exactly what they're talking about.
When we talked with Misty, she gave us some more detail about Allison's health challenges throughout her life.
She has Tourette syndrome and ADHD. Well, when she was younger, she, you know, the tics and the kind of the obsessive compulsive behaviors, you know, made it hard for her to do things at school, like speeches. She'd constantly be like, the beginning of each year, Mom, please tell them I can't do speeches, please. She would cry. She would just sob, thinking that maybe she would have to speak in front of people because of, number one, her anxiety. Number two, maybe the tics that she would experience. She actually grew out of most of the tics as she got older, but still, you know, had some of the obsessive compulsive behaviors that a person with Tourette's would have. When she was little, you know, one of the main things about Tourette's is that, you know, on a more severe end of the spectrum, people will yell out things, bad words, inappropriate things. Hers was completely the opposite. She would actually burst out and blurt out nice things, compliments, and just randomly, you're so pretty, I love your eyeshadow, like, God bless you, and I love you, and just anything nice and complimentary, that's what her little bursts would be. She just really had my heart, you know, she has my heart. I think the biggest thing with Tourette's is the anxiety that a person feels, and that has affected her so deeply her whole entire life. She has scoliosis in her back. It's very painful to her. When you're standing in front of her, your back turned, you can actually see the offset of her shoulder, the back shoulder blades, her shoulder blades. You can actually see the offset to them. And, you know, her and I had been, I'd taken her to her doctor quite a few times over it. And they just said they don't do back braces anymore because they've noticed over time that people, their core and their muscles on their back actually get just wasted away. And so it just fixes one problem to have another problem persist. So they would just give her things, you know, she could do physical therapy. Yoga was like a huge thing that they asked her to do. So just to help with the pain and stuff. At least once a week, she'd just be like laying there and talk about how her back was hurting her.
Despite dealing with learning differences and other obstacles, Allison enjoyed life so thoroughly. After high school, Allison hadn't decided what she wanted to pursue in life. Misty shared with us what she was doing after graduation.
She stayed living at home and hung out with her friends and had fun. You know, she wasn't really interested in like pursuing college or anything at this point. You know, her and I made an agreement that she could live at home. She would work a part-time job and just kind of find herself and discover what she wants to do with her life. So I was totally fine with that. And she was happy that, you know, I was in a position to be able to do that for her. She was just always very gracious to me about, thank you, Mom, for letting me find myself and supporting me in that. So she was actually not working at the time that she went missing, but she had a job interview literally on Monday the 23rd. She had a job interview scheduled for a place that she really wanted to work at. And Allison has a great life here. Allison was very happy here. We're happy as a family. You know, I support her in the things that she's doing. There wasn't really a ton of arguing or she has a great life. And I just literally, and her and I are incredibly close. I cannot imagine her going more than a day without contacting me because that's not the way things were. Her and I always had contact with each other, no matter what. That was just our deal. She didn't want me to worry. So she agreed years ago that she would contact me every single day she was hanging out with her friends.
We also talked with Misty about Allison's older brother, Blake, and she told us about their close relationship and how Allison's disappearance has affected him deeply.
Well, of course, they fought when they were younger, but you know, the last few years, they've gotten way, really, really close. I mean, they're best friends. They would do you know, activities together. They would hang out with each other's friends and kind of doing like the just hanging out. They're incredibly close. He's, you know, incredibly depressed. And, you know, the first few months, it was really hard for us to talk about it. Just incredibly depressed. And, you know, he misses his sister very much. But I gave him some time. And a couple months ago, him and I actually started talking about her and being missing. And he was definitely more receptive and would have dialogue with me about that and kind of how he's feeling. And so him and I, you know, now that we talk about it, then it's been much easier and I see him coping better with it. You know, you just don't really know what to say. You know, we're both very, very deeply affected by it. And sometimes the words are hard to find, but we're in a place where we're learning to be able to talk about it with each other. And
on the weekend of December 20th to the 22nd of 2019, a very strange set of events took place that culminated in Allison's disappearance. We will dive deep into this timeline during part two of Allison's story. However, it's important to discuss a central figure in Allison's disappearance, her boyfriend, Ben, the last person to see Allison, because he gave a strange set of stories to his family, Allison's family, and the police. But one very important detail to note about the timeline is that right before Allison disappeared, she and her boyfriend Ben showed up on a stranger's doorstep asking to use the phone, stating that they had been in a car accident. Billy shared more with us.
He told his dad that they were hiking in the woods and became separated. That's what the 911 call was. To us, it was that he left her. Then it became that she walked away from him. Then it became he walked away from her. When he went home that morning, that next morning, he told his mother, Molly, that Allison was arrested. If you back up the story a little bit, after they made the very first, the one and only phone call. So they went to Sally's. Sally doesn't know them. They knock on the door and they say, we need to use your phone. And she says, okay. He calls his grandmother and says, we were in a car accident and could you come pick us up? And she says, okay. I guess he calls one other person, which I know that his dad told me that he called his parents and that they went up there as well looking for them. But Molly denies that now, but that's fine. So they got off the phone at Sally's and they left. And then pretty soon, the grandma is driving up Old Pumpkin Ridge Road. In fact, we have friends that live on Old Pumpkin Ridge Road with a game cam, and it shows her pulling, and then she pulls into their driveway. You can hear her say, I'm looking for my grandson. He said there was a car accident. Our friend's dad was like, no, I haven't seen him. So then she turns around and goes back down the road to no avail. Okay, so we asked Ben, why were you guys, why didn't you get in the car with your grandma? And he says, because we were scared. We were hiding in the woods because we were scared. Our private detective talked to Molly about that. And what Molly says now is that the grandma was just driving too quickly and missed Ben and Allison. And that Ben actually jumped out in the road and tried to wave her down, but she didn't see him. I'm not sure what to make of that, but I know that Sally was the last third party to see Allison. So they make their way down, to that property that he claims she walked away from him and walked towards the barking dog. The house that he's speaking of, he has a German Shepherd. It's a really, really like a very vocal, loud German Shepherd. He says that Allison walked up towards the dogs because she thought that's where the police were. And that he says that's the last time he saw her, that she got arrested.
I said, so Allison's stuck down here in this area because that's what he told his family, that I left her in the woods. But then his story changes and he says that she left. That she left and went towards the dog, and then that's when she was arrested. So when he came home and he was insistent that she was arrested, that's when they checked online. That's what she says. We checked online. We found out that she wasn't arrested.
Okay, so when they became separated, he said he left her because she wanted away from him. And then he went and he slept in the middle of blackberry bushes. In the very, very beginning, he said he left her there, that he just left her in the woods. That's what he told his family. That's what his family told us.
Billy told us that when Ben returned home on Monday, Ben's mom, Molly, recognized that something wasn't right with her son.
She had just seen them 24 hours prior to him coming home. She had just seen them. She picked him up at the fire station, bought them pie, and then dropped them off at Winco. 24 hours later, that's not that much time. And she said, when he got home, he was really messed up. You could tell he'd been sleeping in blackberry bushes. Oh, how can you tell? Are you serious? But anyway, she said he got home and he looked really messed up. He'd been on a bender. And it's like, wait, so you know your kid is totally on meth, as you say. He's on a bender. He has a warrant. So you keep him from his warrant instead of like trying to get him better and keep him alive and off drugs by turning him in for his warrant. That doesn't make sense to me either.
Ben later told police that he and Allison became separated at some point, but never made any meaningful attempts to find her. Allison's Aunt Billy shared what she knows about the police interviews with Ben and the conversation that she and her sister had with him while he was in jail.
They have talked to him one or two times, maybe three. I'm not sure exactly. But then he lawyered up. He said that I need my lawyer to be able to speak to you. Well, our detective was able to get in and have one more conversation. He gave a little bit more information, but according to our detective, there wasn't much more.
There also was a phone call that we had with Ben when he was in jail in the first couple days. And he had said to Misty, I'm very, very sorry, Misty. I'm very sorry. That could just mean he's sorry she's missing, right? Okay. But also could mean something else. How do you distinguish? He also said that once he left her, that, and this is almost verbatim, He said he wrestled with blackberry bushes for hours. And that's recorded. That's a recorded conversation from Washington County. And then now she's found in the middle of blackberry bushes.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. When Allison disappeared, her boyfriend Ben was the last person to see or hear from her. The accounts of what happened to her came solely from him. While police won't name him specifically as a person of interest, he was the last person to see Allison alive, and some of his behavior certainly seemed to raise questions. In the years prior to Allison's disappearance, Benjamin had been ordered to have no further contact with his sister after he assaulted her. A local young man was also the victim of Ben's violence in another incident. After Allison vanished, Ben was arrested on unrelated charges and is currently incarcerated in a state prison for unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, fraudulent use of a credit card, and theft. All of these offenses took place in the weeks and months immediately prior to Allison's disappearance. Allison had known Ben for a long time, and we wanted to know more. So we asked Allison's mom, Misty, to tell us about Ben.
She met Ben in high school. They were friends in high school. And they kind of had a crush on each other, but they, both of them were in different relationships at the time. So, you know, they never did anything about it. He actually looked her up a couple of months before she went missing and they started dating. She was very honest with me about his troubles in life. He had some drug addictions going on. He had a warrant for his arrest for something that he did in the past. And what he had told her is that he was planning on going to treatment. He was going to spend a year in treatment and that would take care of that warrant and that the legal side of things. She's a very loving, forgiving person and she always wants to see the best of people. So, you know, she gave him a chance. I didn't like it and I actually wasn't allowing him over at our house, especially with a warrant for his arrest. I just can't condone like aiding and abetting. She had him over here while I was at work. And this was a couple weeks before she went missing. I came home early and he was here and you know, him and I had some words and, you know, but I kind of leveled with him and I said, look, you have a family, you have people that love and care about you. Like, why don't you want to take this help? Why don't you just start straightening out your life? You've got a lot of support. I tried to explain to him that, you know, life is so much better without drugs and, you know, he has a future and he's young and he can definitely come back from this. And then I looked at him straight in the eye and I said, be a man. And I said, don't take my daughter down with you.
Allison wanted to see the good in everyone, and the same held for Ben. She seemed to believe that she could help him get back on track and put his life together so that they could have a future. Misty told us more about this.
She was absolutely convinced that if he goes to treatment for a year, then it would take care of everything. And she was really encouraging him to do that. And, you know, a week before she went missing, she actually broke up with him. And she explained to him, I deserve better. I want a better life. You obviously aren't taking care of what you need to take care of. I wish you would. You know, I love you. And I think that after you're done, we could definitely have a future together. But as it stands, it doesn't seem like you want to get the help that is being offered to you. And I know this for a fact that she said these things. She wasn't just telling me, because I actually, on my phone, because her phone is broken, she was actually using the messenger through my phone. And so it was just always on. And I, you know, and being a mom, I would go in there and kind of snoop around just to make sure things are on the up and up. And I saw what she had written to him.
Instead, Ben's actions seemed to cause Allison more harm, and she even had a brush with police and a developing addiction herself.
Something to do with entering a car without permission. She is a marijuana smoker. She has been for the last 2 years. And she started taking Xanax and developed an addiction to it. The Xanax, she was taking it for her severe anxiety and for her body tremors from having Tourette syndrome. And she was always very honest with me about it. And she was actually almost completely tapered off the drug when she went missing.
Ben plays a central role in Allison's story, but we were unable to speak with him since he's currently incarcerated. We wanted to get more perspective on who he is and what he may have had to do with Allison's disappearance. Allison's Aunt Billy also weighed in with her perspective on Ben and Allison's on-again, off-again relationship.
He sought her out, and they started seeing one another. It was actually only, the duration was about 3 months. And even in that 3 months, they would go lots of time, lots of gaps in time where they wouldn't even see each other. But he just kind of, pardon the term, hit her up. I imagine social media. And they just kind of started to spend a little bit of time together. But he would use her. She would like go get him and let him come to the house. And then it would be late at night. And then he would just kind of use her and then leave. And her little heart would be totally broken for days and days and days. And then he would rehook back up with her. Absolutely terrible. Well, then my sister, I don't know how it came about, but it was a big deal because my sister found out that he had a warrant. And for whatever reason, our family like dropped the ball severely, because normally we're like horrible stalkers in the way of like, let's just electronically check them out to see what kind of person they are. And somehow we dropped the ball on this. But my sister found out that he had a warrant. He told Allison that his warrant was, once he was picked up, he was going to have to go to treatment for a year. To my sister, there's no story in between that. Now, I don't know if he told Allison the real story to why he had a warrant. I don't know if she had that information and yet continued to spend time with him, because it's pretty bad. But he had this warrant. He wasn't even allowed at my sister's house. My sister's like, she didn't like him anyway, Blake. He, in fact, confronted Ben about things that Allison and him were staying out too late, not coming around. Blake confronted Ben about it, you know, as an older brother, like, hey, like, and then, you know, it almost turned into like a verbal altercation because, you know, Ben didn't respect Blake and his home. And Alan, Allison's dad, and him got into like an altercation, like a physical fight. So not only Blake, but also Alan. This guy is a fucking piece of shit. Like, in their home, decided that it was a good idea to just mouth off. So everyone had a really bad feeling about him. So when Misty found out about this warrant, it, you know, her red flags were like, no, he's not even allowed in the house. The next step is that because he wasn't allowed in the house, Misty was not supportive of Allison spending time with him. But she's also 20 years old. It's not as if Misty could say, okay, you can't go to lunch with him. You can't go to this or that with him. But Allison was trying to keep their relationship civil.
Allison's dad, Alan, went into more detail about Ben and his relationship with Allison. His protective instinct over Allison comes through in what he had to share.
I know that she met him at through a continuation school here, and I guess they had just become just friends and, you know, just acquaintances because they went to the same school. And what happened was there was a conversation. Now, this would be a couple years later. This was about 3 months before she went missing. She said to me, there's this guy, you know, he's got like problems and stuff like that, but I don't know if I should, you know, he's reaching out to me to kind of maybe start a relationship or to hang out or just get the ball rolling sort of in that sort of way. And she said, he says he doesn't want to take me down with him. And I said, dude, don't talk to him. I said, don't talk to him. Just on sight, visual hair standing up in the back of my neck, I could tell that he was kind of a dubious guy, especially the way he would kind of talk to her. Just seemed like he was preying on naivety and low self-esteem. And the way he would kind of whisper in her ear, and I could see him just telling her all this stuff that was just BS, you know, nice stuff that you'd want to hear. But I could just tell. I consider myself pretty good at reading people, and I just knew what this guy's deal was right away, instantly. I believe she was preyed on for her insecurities and her being depressed and a real lack of confidence at this time. She's having trouble trying to figure out, you know, jobs and whatnot. She's trying not to do Xanax. She had, the week before all this stuff happened, she hadn't spoken with him for like 8 days. So I don't know what happened that Friday. Probably got enticed with something and up talking to him, because she was supposed to be going out to a friend's. And I guess at the last second, like some of Ben's, Bannon, some of like his people came and picked Allison up.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Allison left her home in Hillsboro, Oregon on Friday, December 20th, 2019. Her mom was under the impression that she was hanging out with some girlfriends over the weekend. However, Allison ended up spending time with Ben instead. By Sunday morning, Ben had stolen a truck and they were in nearby North Plains, Oregon. where they knocked on a stranger's door and asked to use the phone. Ben called his grandmother, stating that they had been in an accident and needed a ride. Then they left on foot. When Ben's grandmother arrived, they were nowhere to be seen. The following day, on Monday morning, Ben emerged from the woods without Allison, telling multiple stories to different people about how the pair became separated. Hours later, Ben's father reported Allison missing. Allison's family was alerted and jumped into action trying to piece together Ben's stories and begin the search efforts for Allison. Unfortunately, their searches were unsuccessful, and it would be many more months before a property owner stumbled upon Allison's remains. Even to this day, there's a lot of mystery remaining about why they were in the woods that day and why Ben was the only one to make it out alive. Researching Allison's disappearance left us with so many questions. We reached out to law enforcement and asked the Washington County Sheriff's Office to grant us an interview so that we could talk to them about Allison. We spoke with Detective Walter Monk. Here's what he had to say.
My name is Walter Monk. I'm a detective with Washington County Sheriff's Office in Oregon. Been doing it for 22 years now. Actually, as a kid, I never wanted to be a cop. It's not that I didn't want to be. It was never an interest at the time. And a friend in high school was a cop. You know, once he got out, and he's like, hey, you got to go on a ride along. I went on a ride along, and after the first night, I was hooked. And it was probably the most boring night I've ever been on, and it was the most fun I've ever had.
We asked Detective Monk to walk us through how his department became involved in Allison's disappearance.
On the night of Monday, December 23rd, our patrol division got a call from the reporting party was Dawn Garland, which is Ben's father, reporting her as missing. Our patrol deputies went out and made contact, and once they got all the information, they requested the investigation division's help with talking with Ben and just trying to determine her location. That's where we kind of came into it. As in general knowledge, basically, it's not illegal for an adult to be missing on its face, I guess, but it varies. So in order for an adult to be listed as missing, essentially, they have to be considered endangered. Meaning that, due to the person being missing, it would put them in more danger. Like they have critical medicine that they have to take and they didn't take it with them or something. Or there's prior knowledge that maybe they're suicidal or stuff like that. That's where we're able to list them as a missing person if we can list them as an endangered missing person. The information we had on Allison did not rise to the level of endangered. But beyond the endangered part of somebody going missing, you know, when you have the information that we received makes us think, hey, there's more to this story to this person going missing, i.e. foul play or something. And we can include that in as a person going missing and them being missing to where we continue to investigate versus somebody just didn't want to be found. So with Allison going missing, the situation and all the information we gathered basically made it odd. I guess we'll put it that way. You know, she was with her boyfriend through the woods. Information was that they thought the police were chasing them. In reality, it was not the case. They get separated, and basically the separation was not by accident, I guess you'd say, is the way the story came out. And essentially, once we got all this information, this didn't really pass the smell test. So that's why we continued to investigate.
Even though it was nearing Christmas, search teams from the Sheriff's Department and volunteers came out to look for Allison. Detective Monk told us more.
We activated our Washington County Search and Rescue Team, which is our explorer post. They pretty much searched for, I think we had them out there for 5 days. They utilized other search and rescue teams in the area, as well as canines, civilian volunteers. Turnout was actually pretty awesome, given the fact that it was Christmas. And ultimately, we came up with nothing other than more questions, I guess. That's kind of where we continued on, and to a point, I'm still there. I'm still trying to sort things out as why, you know, a lot of why did this happen? Why did that happen? Her backpack was found. Basically, it was found along Pumpkin Ridge Road in a field in the general vicinity where we put both of them, both Allison and her boyfriend, Ben, potentially going through there. We're still in the process of determining at which point we put them there. As far as evidentiary, it was personal belongings. It was Allison's, some of her personal belongings, makeup, identification, stuff like that. Nothing that would denote any criminal activity. To our knowledge, she had on Ben's tennis shoes when they separated from one another. That's basically the only thing that would really assist us, is if we locate those tennis shoes. Other than that, really, there's no anything that denotes that she was harmed in any way or anything like that at this point.
News articles discussing searches for Allison indicate that the police found items believed to belong to Allison, but they wouldn't identify the items nor confirm that they were hers. Detective Monk did not elaborate on any other items that were found, but did say that the investigation continues. Given the information that we know, it seems that Allison didn't choose to disappear. So we asked Detective Monk about that.
That's one of those questions that my feeling is, if and when we figure out exactly how this played out, it'll probably not be that much of an issue, because the story we have has been fairly consistent. But again, why? On its face, I believe it was not voluntary. However, determining if her disappearance is criminal is not something I can make at this time.
We also asked the detective if the police are willing to name any persons of interest in Allison's case.
Not being able to determine if a crime's been committed, at this point, I can say that there's a person of interest. Yes and no. When you say person of interest, to me, it denotes a crime's occurred. Well, yeah, what I could say is hypothetically, if I determine a crime's committed, the last person to be with that missing person who, you know, was killed or whatever, that person is, of course, an absolute person of interest. But in this situation, pretty much everybody up in that area would be somebody we would look at until we can exclude them.
Finally, we asked how the public can help and what the police need in order to continue working on Allison's case.
So we've received a lot of tips, and actually quite a bit of tips across the entire country. I would say to keep them coming. When we get a tip, we have to follow up on them all. That can mean contacting that caller or go to the location that was described. In a couple of the tips that I've received, I have gotten a couple pictures, and I could say, okay, well, that's close. And I'd send the picture to Misty. Hey, Misty, does this at all look like Allison on a bad day or something? And she's like, no, that's not her. Or I would determine, no, that's not her. So we can move forward to the next tip. Here in the Portland metro area, we have TriMet, which is our public transit. You know, we've had a few tips where, like, hey, I saw her on this bus on this date. Well, this was like a week ago. TriMet only keeps their video for 2 days. There's actually multiple numbers going around on the missing person signs, and all those numbers are fine. So if you happen to see a poster, any of the numbers would work. The easiest for us is to call the sheriff's office, basically at the 503-846-2500 number. That will go into the investigations division. Given the current climate of COVID, a lot of majority of that phone call to that number goes to voicemail, but it's constantly being checked and and anything involved with this case would come to me directly. Otherwise, it goes, you know, if somebody calls dispatch, it goes through patrol and they have to, you know, vet it to figure out who it belongs to and all that stuff. So the easiest way is to contact that number, the 2500 number. As far as anonymous, yes, you can. If a person calls in and wants to remain anonymous and is reporting criminal activity, it does make my job a little more difficult. It's harder to put weight behind an anonymous tip if I was to write a search warrant, per se. I can't really use that on an unnamed person that's not shown credibility. If something comes in that sounds, hey, this is something that is really important, I am going to try to locate that person and talk to them, say, hey, can we try to do this with your name so I could potentially, you know, write a search warrant behind it, if that's the case. Otherwise, if you're just looking to drop information, yeah, you don't have to leave your name. That's up to you.
That brings us to the end of part one of Allison's story. Be sure to tune in for part two, where we explore Allison's disappearance in depth, establish the timeline of events leading up to her disappearance, and hear from her family and friends about what life without Allison looks like. We'll also discuss the possibilities of what caused Allison's death, and what the investigation into her disappearance and death looks like going forward.
It's just, but there's so many different scenarios. It's hard, it's just a whirlwind of different angles that this can go to at this point. There are a lot of different avenues which make your head spin trying to make sense of all this stuff.
My dad passed away, and then 14 days later, we got the call about Allison. It has been terrible. It has been a terrible time. Yeah, you just take your little moments, you know, where you... Yeah, but then you're reminded that death is a possibility. We already obviously know that. But then when I think about my father, and I know he wasn't ready. I know it wasn't his time. I know it was horrible. Then my mind goes, yes, death is a possibility. You stop grieving and you just kind of try to move to a different place. You know, it's like because of years and years of obsessing over the fact that people go missing. You know, my kids tell most mom, but that I'm overprotective. I do not let them just do things on their own. I do not let my daughter walk alone. I don't, you know, I try very hard. Allison and I, in fact, got into our very, like, it was kind of one of our first almost fights because she was wanting to be this free 19-year-old and hanging out with, you know, friends and doing, you know, doing things that they're doing, you know, with their parents, not focusing on them. And, you know, I have finally said to her, I'm like, in a not so nice way, I'm like, Allison, this way of life could lead you to something that you're not prepared for. Like, you have to start staying in context. We have to know where you are. We have to, you know, it's really common in her age to kind of push back on that. And so it wasn't, you know, an uncommon thing, but I was being very pushy about it because she's really beautiful and she's very trusting and very friendly. So her just being out with the world being the way it is, it was always really frightening to me. And I really just want everyone to be safe.
If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Don't forget to tune in for the second chapter of Allison's story. airing later this week. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.